Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, my guest is Agape Garcia. Agape's personal mission is to help lead others in transforming their survival of domestic violence into post-traumatic growth. So I definitely want to talk about that today. She shares her personal testimony to empower others. She loves teaching her BYIS formula. So we'll get her to define what that is more. And she combines situational awareness with emotional intelligence to learn how to control your triggers. So she's a real treat to have here today. So I'm going to call you Garcia, just like your bio does. So Garcia, that way I know I'm not screwing up your first name. So Garcia, tell us more about you. Anything you want to share?
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor to be here and a privilege. Thank you. And about me, you would never know that I have gone through anything that I'm going to share with you guys today based on how I am in the world. When I walk out of the house, the relationships I have, you know, within the community and in various places, I am always smiling. People say that I have a way of finding the silver lining through worst case scenarios, anything, et cetera. Sometimes it gets on people's last nerve, but I say what you see is what you get. And you know, it's not that I have always been that way. It's just who I choose to be. And it's taken me some time to get there. And that's a majority of, you know, what we're going to talk about today is that growth that happens after experiencing such trauma.
Yeah. So I want to just remind our audience that October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And Garcia has a story to tell us about domestic violence. So maybe we could start with that, Garcia. Just share, you know, only what you've already have publicly shared. And then after you share, then we can learn more about post-traumatic growth and what you've done with that to create your next venture that we want to hear about. So just start with your story.
Sure. Thank you. I think when I share my story, I bounce all over the place because it's lifelong, to be honest. And, you know, I'll start with saying that, you know, I was a recipient of gestational domestic violence. You know, my mother was in a, you know, marriage that was unhealthy. And so while she was pregnant with me, I knew that I was receiving trauma. To the point where when I was almost three, she packed her bags and ran away, and she left me and my baby sister in that environment. She just packed her stuff and left by herself. And shortly after that, my sister passed away of cancer. So my dad now lost his wife, lost his baby, and he's, I guess, stuck with me. And his best way of coping was to, you know, check out. He worked third shift, slept all day, and enjoyed his social life. And so overnight, pretty much, I inherited every void imaginable. No mother, no sibling. Dad is there, but not there. And, you know, it's so quiet that it's loud ringing in my ears. So childhood was very much so being independent and learning how to survive, learning how to get through life. I did not know then, I do know now, that it was very instinctive the way that I handled coping with that, you know, because I took things that were available, like after school programs and, you know, at the rec hall, at the neighborhood park where you could do gymnastics or woodcraft or whatever, you know, and play outside. Like I did things to kind of fill those voids. Mm-hmm. And so then during teenage years, and by the way, you know, my dad stayed his, you know, playful self. Okay. And when I say playful, I mean like roughhousing. So their DCFS was at my house every year as well, checking in to see, you know, how bad is it? I was never taken. But, you know, textbook during teenage years, of course, I was in a violent relationship as a teenager. It's all I knew. It's all I was around. You know, that's what happens outside. You know, going into high school, you have to walk through metal detectors to get in. Violence was all that, you know, it was the norm. So when I went through, I dropped out of high school when I had my teenage pregnancy, I knew at that point that I was going to have my baby and that I was not going to be like either of my parents. This is an opportunity for me to be different and break links. Even at such a young age, I was already, you know, had work ethics, understood how to get around the neighborhood, like had a community of support per se. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that violent relationship was almost 6 years long. It wasn't until I had my daughter and until she was born that I just overnight packed my bags and took my daughter with me, okay. You know, and made sacrifices, moved into a cold basement with no kitchen, just, you know, brick walls and cement floor. And so fast forwarding to my later 20s, you know, now I got my GED. I'm back in school. I pursued college. I'm working full time. My daughter's going to school across the street. The babysitter's 3 blocks away to the left. My job is 3 blocks away to the right. Even if my car broke down, I was okay. Nobody was going to miss anything. Like, I had figured it out and I felt that I was on top of the world. You couldn't tell me anything. I forgave my mother. I tried to reconcile with her. She did not want to. I had to accept it for what it was and give love to my daughter at this point. And I just felt very well balanced. And I was out of the hood by that time. Mm-hmm. So here comes an opportunity 8 years later where I find myself dating this gentleman, and, you know, we decided to start a family. And During the time of my pregnancy, he was offered a job out of state across the country. And I had the opportunity to stay or go. We were not married yet. And I decided to go. And I drove out there 7 months pregnant. He had already been out there, you know, getting settled and starting the job and whatnot. I had to, you know, be a good planner with giving time to the job and giving, you know, my time to my semester and all that. So I show up 7 months pregnant, excited. My daughter didn't even miss a day of school. It was a smooth transition from one to the other across the states. And 3 weeks later, I'm unpacking my belongings and I found remnants of somebody else, another woman. Mm-hmm. And my eyes are bulging out of my head. My heart is pounding through my chest. The thoughts are running through my mind rampant, like, did he have family? Did he have friends? I didn't hear about anything. Did somebody come? You know, I'm just being taunted all day. And, you know, I have a hard time letting things fester and eat me alive, per se. So later that night, you know, I did everything like normal, pick up my daughter from school, come home, you know, cook, homework, clean, etc. It was not until about 10:30 at night when I just said, you know, we need to have a conversation. And, you know, we sat down to talk and I said, you know, when I was unpacking, I found remnants of someone else and I want to know what is this about? Because I came all the way out here, you know, and he said, you were going through my stuff. I said, no, you did not hear me. When I was unpacking, I found remnants of, and I did not even have an opportunity to finish what I was saying. He had pushed me down from the couch to the floor. I was on the floor. He was sitting on my pregnant stomach. I'm 8 months at this time. He has his left hand around my neck and his right hand closed fist punching me over and over and over. And I'm squirming around. Apparently it was loud enough that my daughter woke up and I hear this voice I've never heard before. Mom, mom. And while I'm on the floor going through all that, that little voice registered in my ear, hit my brain. My body got this like extreme gush of adrenaline that my feet slam on the floor. My hips thrust towards the ceiling. He rolls off the top of me. I pop up. I don't even know how in the world that I pop up. I run around the couch. My daughter's right there already at the bottom of the stairs. I grab her hand and we're out just like that.
Wow.
I ran to the first house that had a light on. You know, just bam, 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 please. I need to use your phone, etc. So you can only imagine that the devastation that I was experiencing at that time, the reality, like being able to accept reality at that time. There was no accepting reality at that time. It was just complete chaos, complete cloudiness, just question after question. What am I going to do? Where am I going to go? No friends, no family, new neighborhood. Don't even know the state laws. Don't even know what's going to happen. Like, what? And that night changed my life forever. It changed the mother that I was to become and mm-hmm. that I was. And it definitely changed me as the woman that I, you know, was and to become. And, you know, I would have to say that, you know, we could go into hours and hours talking about life after that. But, you know, right now it's, you know, 20 some odd years later, and I was in nothing but survival and desperation mode from that moment. You know, yes, I called the police. Yes, he went to jail. Yes, I testified. Yes, I fought mentally, emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually. I was in line for food stamps. I was in line for shelter. I was living out of the car at points in my life. Like it was real. It was real. And if it wasn't for the life I had fighting to be independent and taking care of myself and raising my daughter on my own, I don't think I would have had the belief in myself that I would be able to do it a second go around, because the circumstances were extremely different. I mean, I've never been stuck in a place where I literally couldn't drive, fly, or go anywhere because the doctors deemed me high risk. And then never in a place where I didn't know at least somebody that would be able to help in some capacity. And going back to where I came from was not going to be an option. We had mutual friends, mutual, you know, people that we know. And why would I go? Why? It just doesn't make sense to go back. Mm-hmm. It may be comfortable, but that doesn't mean that it's safe or smart. Right. So
happened? Can I ask what happened to the baby?
So of course, so the baby, like I said, I was deemed high risk pregnancy. I was able to convince the doctors to give me a C-section prior to the due date. So he was actually born 10 days early because they understood, you know, my concern of how much stress the baby was in being inside of me, mm-hmm. which at that time, of course, I was not thinking about the trauma that, you know, my unborn child was going through. I didn't have the capacity. I didn't think about that. I didn't know that back then. Mm-hmm. You know, of course now I do, and I feel terrible because I, you know, repeated something that I promised I wouldn't as a mother. And that's something I want to talk about too, is, you know, we all feel guilty for something that happened to us or because of us, taking responsibility. But you can only do that for so long, because in reality, if you don't accept or realize that you did not have control over what happened to you and that it was not your fault, you know, you did the best that you could with what you had at the moment. You have to get to that space in your head, because that's what differentiates you from a victim versus being victimized. You were a victim when it happened, when it was happening. You know, you were victimized once you realized that it's not your fault and that you did not have control over that situation.
Right.
Okay.
You weren't beating yourself up.
Correct.
Somebody did that to you. Was there any signs of violence from him before that day?
You know, and that's the thing. We dated for 2 years. We were in plenty of arguments. I met family, friends, coworkers, you know, been around enough people, pushed enough buttons, I thought. You know, my friend who I worked with, she even said, you know, have the biggest blow up ever before you go. Just make sure, you know, it was funny. But a majority of my friends are older than me by at least 20 years. You know, maybe that's the missing mom syndrome. I don't know. But, you know, but I took her advice and I did it. And, you know, to the point where I even packed his bags and put him outside and everything. And, you know, there was no red flags of violence. And that's where I beat myself up the most, because coming from the neighborhood where situational awareness is just, you know, a part of growing up, otherwise, you know, you will get hurt, jumped, robbed, whatever. And then me already being in such violent relationships, friendships, environments outside the house all the time. You know, why wasn't I able to see, smell, hear, taste his streak of violence? You know, And later on in life, of course, that's when you learn about narcissism and what that looks like and how that plays out.
Right.
And I was like, holy crap. You know, I was like a protocol. I was a checklist. You know, here I am, this strong, independent woman that has her stuff together. You know, that's a great challenge for a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point is breaking you down to make you completely codependent or doubting yourself or breaking you down to where you're questioning who you are and what your existence is. And, you know, hey, this person was extremely successful in doing that. And I went through that for a very long time. And I would have to say that my children were my strength for me to not fester in those emotions, but go into the logic and the thought process and the way that you talk to yourself and how you have to get your stuff done that has to get done. Because if you allow those emotions to swallow you, consume you, you will not be able to reach the goals that are not wanted, but required in order for you to go through and overcome the hurdles, the speed bumps yourself, really.
Yeah, it's a really incredible story that you went through. And it's, I think my experience is that when we love someone, it's so easy to just focus on the good or seeing the good, you know. So you were trying to be a supportive partner, and supportive partners see the good. And you had hopes and dreams for your family, you know, you wanted to have a different family than what you had. So I hope you're way past the point of beating yourself up.
Yes, I am. I mean, you know, I don't beat myself up anymore, but I won't lie and say that, you know, sometimes those thoughts of, you know, gosh, you know, that one decision, mm-hmm. you know, changed everything. You know, there's times where that happens and it no longer brings me to tears because of it. You know, I'm able to say, okay, and because of that decision, you know, these are all the great things that has come out of it, you know. And some of those things I'll share, like, you know, obviously giving up, you know, my career was one of those things, because even though I was in college and I was, you know, going after my bachelor's degree and whatnot, after that incident, I had to take some extreme time off because my life was in such shambles. And the only thing that mattered was how much do I have to make an hour in order to pay the bills and put food on the table. The dreams and the self, I guess, aspirations get put to the side, because as a sole provider and protector, it's what are the needs, not the wants.
Right.
And that really put a lot of perspective into my life. And I would have to say that just my life in whole, you know, I think that I'm 50 years older than what I really am because of everything I've been through and had to figure out on my own.
You've already lived 4 lifetimes, right?
Yeah. You know? And so what I had to do was be so laser focused on every second of the clock, every minute of the clock, every step that I took and that I took with my children, you know, paying attention to where I was driving, which route I was taking. Am I taking the same route every day? You know, like, I just had to change everything. And becoming so laser focused on your world that brings you to this very small place, and, you know, and being in that survival and desperation mode for so long, what I did was I became emotionless. Everything was what we had to do, where we had to go, what had to happen. This is what you know, just everything was a had to. And it wasn't until my daughter was moving out in her early 20s. And she said, you know, I thank you for everything that you've done. You've been here for me. You've been a helicopter mom, if anything, you know.
Really protective. Yeah.
Yeah. And she said, you know, and I really love you for it. She said, you were always there. I could always reach out and touch you, but not emotionally. You were never emotionally there. I could be crying next to you. You wouldn't even know or hear. And if I tried to cradle or cuddle or be affectionate, you know, it was short lived. And
I'm sure that was so hard to hear.
Oh my gosh. At first I was super offended. What are you saying? What? Do you not know everything? You know, that was so unfair to her for me to even be like that. You know, and sure, that was another night I was crying for sure. Of course, I'm feeling guilty. Oh my gosh. My whole thing of protecting and providing was super a part of being, you know, loving and affectionate. Of course, you know, and I learned, you know, those 20 some odd years that I was raising them like that, like a tight militant, you know, ship. I did not know, or I did not have the means and I did not have the resources about emotional awareness, emotional well-being, emotional health, mental health, mental well-being. I didn't know any of those things. Those things were not even talked about back then,
right?
You know, yeah. And I didn't even have the time. Are you kidding me? I'm too busy calling 1-800 numbers for other help.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Out of storage, living out of the car, trying to feed my baby and get a job. Like, no way, no time for that.
Right.
So at this time, I changed my laser focus from being that, you know, person that I became over time into, I need to understand this, because not only did I create this void in my daughter's heart, I made that mistake of not even realizing it, because that was my way of loving her, by not leaving her side, by showing her I'm here for her no matter what, through thick and thin. This is unconditional love. I will never check out. I will never leave. I will never abandon, you know.
Right.
To me, that was love.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. To her, that was not. So I understood, because I started with the 5 love languages and I started reading that book and I had her take those quizzes with me. I needed to understand her language. She needed to understand mine. We needed to then become aware of each other and then our way, right? So we did. We worked on that. I'm now going to tell you that it's about, you know, 6-7 years later. And this girl did not believe me in the beginning. She thought I was being sarcastic. She thought I was playing around. I was getting irritated. Like, I'm really trying. I'm being vulnerable. Either you want this or you don't. Because for you to sit here and think that, you know, I'm being sarcastic, you're killing me.
Trying to fix myself.
Yes. And you're pushing me away by laughing and thinking I'm being sarcastic. Oh my gosh. It was crazy. But, you know, here's the thing. If you're not clear on why you're doing what you're doing, it's easy to get derailed.
Absolutely. Okay?
So I had to remind myself, I had to, my own inner voice had to keep me in check. You're doing this because, you know, mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I always teach on in my programs, is like, you always have to remember your why. Because yes. If you don't, it's easy to get derailed. And, you know, of course, the purpose, your why is attached to that purpose. You know, so keeping that purpose at the forefront as well, and keeping it intertwined and staying committed for the reasons that you're purposed, you know. And I will just have to say also that, you know, I can't say that anything's perfect. It's not that we have the perfect relationship, but it is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And it has taken time. It's intentional. And, you know, when we are in trauma-driven responses, when we're living in trauma-driven mindset, we are extremely independent. We are having issues, you know, trusting. We do draw the lines, you know, the boundaries. We isolate ourselves so much. And I've learned that sometimes those things are sabotagers. I've sabotaged myself so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Can't even tell you the great things I missed out on, you know?
Yeah, it's part of being a survivor, the self-sabotage. Yeah.
And post-traumatic growth, not a lot of people are aware of what that is. There's a few definitions. My all-in-one definition is, it's when you come out of a crisis, out of a traumatic situation, stronger mm-hmm. and wiser.
Ooh.
Stronger and wiser. And
that's then, you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And then once you recognize it, that you are stronger and wiser, it's like, what do you do with it now? Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do with it?
So tell us what you did.
That's where I say, like, okay, now that my kids are grown, now that I actually went through, you know, the childhood, the teenage, the adult, the mental, the emotional, the financial, the spiritual, the, like, I went through almost every level.
Because mm-hmm. It affects every level. Trauma impacts every level.
Almost. Yeah.
No, every level. Research.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing. The trust the not being able to trust is when you really break down the layers, it's yourself. You're not trusting yourself. Mm-hmm. You're not trusting yourself to let somebody in. You're not trusting yourself to be dependent on somebody else. You're not trusting yourself to be vulnerable. You're not trusting yourself to be, you know, intuitive. You're not trusting yourself with your judgments anymore. And it's really about regaining your relationship with yourself so that you can trust yourself.
Yeah.
Your boundaries. Yes. Who you are. And I break that down so many different ways. And I can do one with you right now if you want.
Is this part of the BYS?
It's a part of a program. B-Y-I-S. I could do the BYIS also.
Okay. I'm curious about that too. Both. Okay. I'm ready.
So BYIS stands for Be Your Incredible Self. I believe that we all want to be our incredible selves no matter what. That's why we get dressed the way we do. That's why we bother, you know, our hair. That's why we bother putting on at least sunglasses and lipstick, earrings. You do something to level up yourself all the time. It's a great positive thing. Why wouldn't you want to? It helps you feel good, you know? Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten to the trigger part yet, so I'll save the Be Your Incredible Self formula for in a minute. But being your incredible self starts with your mind. It starts with your mindset. Like I said, how do you talk to yourself? What's your relationship with yourself, right? So one of the things that I would like to do with your audience today is to just, you know, really think about what is your definition of strong, being strong. What does being strong mean to you? I have never received two definitions that were the exact same. Mm-hmm. It's our personal definition. And this exercise is to show you that words mean different things to different people. We have our personal definition, and that definition that we have is our belief system. Mm-hmm. Our belief system is how we talk, how we respond, how we react, and what we're doing. Because we believe in what we think. So that's how we're now taking it out into the world, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have your definition of what your being strong means, my next question is, are you walking in your definition?
How many people say yes to that?
Right. If you are not walking in your definition, we just identified a place you're not aligned.
Right.
So if you're not aligned mentally and emotionally, now you have a gap. Mm-hmm. That gap may be where your triggers are coming into play. You would definitely be triggered if you're not aligned.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Say that you're very unhappy with your job. You're constantly complaining about it. Somebody comes to you and, you know, says something about it, trying to be helpful. Well, you know, maybe if you update your resume and put it out there, you can change your situation. And immediately, well, what would you know about that? You're just immediately snapping. You're short-tempered and snapping when this person was really just trying to offer an idea to help you get out of that situation that they hear you complaining about all the time. And you just snapped at them. But that's because you're unhappy with where you are and you're not doing something to make that change. Mm-hmm. Right? So you have your emotional. And you have your mental. And are you taking action? Where's your purpose? Where's your commitment? Where's your clarity? And all of that. And just that simple example I provided, right? So in that moment where that person was asking, you know, well, why don't you just update your resume and put it out there? That person felt something in their body when they were in that moment of being triggered, because they were all in their emotions. That's what made them snap. So if you could think about a moment or a situation or even something right now currently that you're dealing with that you want to confront and work out, if somebody that you love or anybody is saying something about that situation that you care about so much that you want to remedy and you feel triggered by it, you know where that trigger is living in your body. You know where that emotion is living in your body, because your body actually goes through a physiological change. Your eyebrows can go up. They can go down. Your blood can rush to your face. You'll feel your cheeks get hot. Mm-hmm. You get that lump in your throat. You get that ball in your stomach. Your shoulders go back or hunch over. There's something that you do. Something. Yeah. And if you just can't wrap your head around it, I'll give an example of a positive trigger. Just put on your favorite song and you're starting to move. That's right. Your negative triggers do the same thing. It's just a different type of movement. Yeah. It's for you to identify. It's your body. It's your emotion. It's your trigger. Figure that part out. Because as soon as you do, you are at your highest place of authority to control yourself. You're either going to respond or react.
Yeah. At least you'll have the awareness.
That's right. That's right. So that situational awareness with that emotional intelligence, know where these emotions reside, know how you're going to handle them real time. And hey, if the best way to handle it is to just walk away and say, I'll come back to you in a few, I need to cool down and think about it, then great. Look at that extreme level of intelligence. You're doing what's best for you and the situation. You understand what I'm saying? So it's really being able to identify and think about it as a mom, right? When you're like teaching your kids how, especially teenager, when you're teaching your kids how to control their triggers, because they're just flying off the handle, and maybe you trying to tell them something and they're responding to you that way. And you're trying to tell them, but I'm telling you with love. I'm telling you because I love you, not because I'm trying to lecture you. I'm just sharing wisdom. You know, that's the same thing for most people that are trying, that love you and are trying to tell you something about you as an adult.
Whoops.
Yeah.
So please go on and tell us about your nonprofit that you're starting up. I'm very curious and excited to learn more about that.
Oh, yes. Okay. So I will say that, last year I was in a life-threatening car accident. I literally had 1% chance of surviving. Ooh. And that was another huge piece of trauma that I was exposed to. This time, you know, I wasn't fighting for my life because I made decisions and found myself in a situation. This was completely unexpected, out of control, my control, everybody's control. And being in the hospital for over a month and some change just in the quiet walls and the ceiling, you know, for those of you that have been there, you know what I'm talking about when you're in this space of being in the world and not. It's this really weird space. And my questions were, what's my purpose? Why was I spared? What was my life spared for? My kids are grown. I did my job. We're okay. I really, you know, had a hard time trying to figure out what was my purpose at this point. And I came to the conclusion that I was spared to help people, to help real-time victims suffering through a relationship where, and with kids, a family, families, and either the mother or the father really want to leave because the abuse is that bad and it's really it's detrimental to the child. And real-time resources are not real-time available. And so my mission is to help real-time victims. So this nonprofit that I started is called Confronting Domestic Violence. Right now, it's only active in one state. I'm seeking other sponsors, but it's to help you relocate. It's to help you relocate you and your children so that you don't have to leave everything behind to start over in safety. For safety, for a second chance. You know, like I said, I stood in lines. I called over 1,800 numbers. There was points where I was just living out of my car. There's not real time resources right now. Since COVID-19, a bunch of resources have been sent to COVID-19. Right. So, you know, and then I'm collaborating with other nonprofits where, you know, one nonprofit offers therapy, hypnotherapy, where, you know, you can actually go through the process of receiving a session or two or however many it is that's required. So our point in offering that hypnotherapy is so to break that cycle, to break that cycle of returning, to break that cycle of, you know, going back and becoming this pendulum. It's to you have that clarity to move, to start fresh, to provide differently for your children, the different environment for a second chance, then we don't ever want you to forget that why. Stay clear in that purpose and stay committed to that. Everything else will pan out. So that is what the nonprofit is for. That's our mission. Our vision is to sway legislation into mandating that OSHA modify their current workplace violence policy. I've done my research. Workplace violence, for most people, they interpret that as being like coworker, subordinate manager. In reality, yes, that is a part of it. The mm-hmm. other part of it that people are not familiar with is that a lot of it is domestic violence spillover, domestic violence that comes into the workplace. So I have this, you know, thing of like, oh, domestic violence isn't your problem until it's clocked in. No, it's your problem whether they're on the clock or not, because it's coming in no matter what.
Right.
And so I would like for that workplace violence policy to be upgraded into a workplace violence program, because honestly, what use is a policy if you don't have a program? And if EAP programs offer help for gamblers and porn addicts, I would want them to also incorporate domestic violence, because that's a real-time need as well. Mm-hmm. So these different, you know, these different places that offer different things that are being funded without having to ask for donations, corporations is the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, they should care. I believe they should care about their employees just as much as the employees that they care about that are offering these other, you know, avenues of help. This Amen. Is the livelihood of people.
Yeah. And I think there are some corporations that do care and taking notice, but not enough of them.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely. There are some, but not enough.
We're going to change that.
Yes, we are. Yes, mm-hmm. we are. Because the for-profit I have in mind is to knock on the corporation's doors to make sure they're compliant with that new policy and program so that people can start getting the help right away. We don't have to wait years and years for it to roll out. Is once that law goes into effect, it's time to find out if they're compliant with it. And that's like, that will be where my mission changes, the vision. And I start heading that direction, but that's the nonprofit. The Be Your Incredible Self is for women that have already left their violent relationship or their toxic or narcissistic relationship. And they are now like in their space where they're living their life and getting their stuff back, getting their, you know, psyche back together, because you really do come out of a toxic relationship a different person. Not saying that you're better or worse, you're just a different person because you went through so much. And, you know, this is your opportunity, and I will call it an opportunity, to say to yourself, okay, I'm not going to live. I know that this is something, a phase I need to go through, but I'm not going to allow myself to be consumed by it. I'm just going to go through the process, you know. Or you are saying like, okay, I've been in this space for a little bit too long. I've tried to get out of this, you know, cycle that I'm putting myself through, and I'm having a really hard time breaking these bad habits. That's where Be Your Incredible Self comes in and teaches you and gives you the tools and shows you how to apply the good, the positive, the good habits that just become eventually after 45 days, it becomes conditioned habits. And then your awareness comes into play and you become mentally and emotionally aligned with what you're feeling and what you're thinking and what you're actually doing. So just trust the process. I'm a certified high performance coach as well. So I use Brendon mm-hmm. Burchard's like foundational coaching that is okay. scientifically backed mm-hmm. for high performers and how they have to keep their psyche going. I use that as the foundation. And then I use my years of wisdom, lessons learned, the do's and the don'ts on top of that, because I've been there and done that. So I completely understand the battlefield of the mind and the thoughts, or I'm sorry, the mind and the heart.
Wow. You've been such a gift today. I know we could probably talk all day, really. And I can't because I have another podcast coming on soon. But I'm glad you mentioned Brendon Burchard too. He's an amazing coach. Do you have any books that you're planning to write, or have you written a book yet?
Oh my gosh, thank you for asking. Yes. I'm actually in the process of co-authoring two. One of them is Behind Closed Doors. I Survived Domestic Violence, and You Can Too.
Is it on Amazon?
That is on Amazon. This is the first edition. I'm going to be coming out in the second edition, which is scheduled to be released in January. And then I'm also co-authoring a book, which I don't have in front of me. It's on my Kindle. And that is Everyday Successful Women. Let me make sure. I just did
Successful.
this 2 days ago, so let me make sure. Are you editing this?
No.
Okay, well, hold on 1 second.
Maybe. Yeah, we're a low budget affair right now.
Oh, that's all right. Okay, it's not populating. All right. Well, anyways, my the other book, just give me 1 second.
You can also email it to me too, and I can update the show notes on any books that you recommend, any books that you write now or in the future.
Okay, great. It's called, I'm sorry, I have it right now. It's called Everyday Woman's Guide to Success in Your Business. Everyday Woman's Guide to Success in Your Business.
Success in your
Yep.
business.
And so I'm actually going to have fun with this chapter because it's how we mask it. It's going to be about how we mask it. We can have this guide and we can be all these successful things here and do and go like I thought I was for those 20 some odd years, raising my kids by the clock, by the minute. This is what we got to do. Woo! And then later realizing, yeah, that I was not doing everything right. And that's because I neglected myself. And that is what I want to put out there for everybody who's listening, is that if you know that you're in a space that isn't healthy and that truly isn't you, the more you neglect your mindset and your well-being, the steeper the price becomes over time.
Ooh, that's a huge takeaway for sure.
Yeah.
Tell everyone how to find you.
BeYourIncredibleSelf.com.
BeYourIncredibleSelf.com.
All spelled correctly.
We appreciate that. Garcia, thank you for being on today and educating my audience and your audience, and I wish you much success.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, HealThriveDream.com.